You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, happy Thursday to you. Appreciate you being here. Injuries are the story of the day. We'll get to that here in just a minute. A little bit later in our podcast, we'll have a Q&A with Peyton Hillis from the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club today. So hope you'll stick around for that. Chip Souza here with me. Injuries, both football and basketball, as I said, are the story of the day. It began with the SEC availability report being released last night for the Arkansas-Mississippi State football game on Saturday. JaQuindon Jackson is doubtful for Arkansas. Rodney Hill, who they hope to get back, is listed as questionable. I think Arkansas goes into this game against Mississippi State with some real, I don't know if concern is the right word, but I mean, there's some real questions about the backfield.
There are. I mean, you know, did they call Braylon Russell in and said, how do you feel about 35 carries Saturday?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it could be that kind of day.
Yeah, it reminds me, and I mean, you go way back for this. In 2000, they went down there. I don't know if you remember this game. They played in like the ice and the sleet in Starkville. But they had injuries at running back. I think Cedric Cobbs was out, Fred Talley was out, and they had Brandon Holmes go down there, and he carried it like 41 times.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was they only scored 17 points, but I mean, it was just turn around and hand it to him every single time. I don't know if it's going to be like that with Braylon Russell, but I do think that we're going to see him take on a workload unlike anything we've seen before this year.
Well, and they still have Dominion too, so they have two guys that can run the ball. But I think they've already pretty much told Braylon, you're going to get. Well, they say I need to eat. I want to eat. You're going to get a chance to eat a lot Saturday.
Yeah, he certainly is, and I think they're going to throw the ball a lot against Mississippi State. Teams have had some success throwing against Mississippi State. Honestly, I'll be honest. I have not looked at, the pass versus the run defense for Mississippi State. It seems to me like they're leaky all over the place.
Pretty porous on defense.
Yeah.
I think in both.
Well, I mean, their defensive efficiency is so bad.
Yeah.
I mean, it's unlike anything I've ever seen. You know, you have a bad defense when you're giving up points, say, like, at a 40% clip, or even I would even go as low as maybe a 36-37% clip. They're at a 52% clip going into this game that they're giving up points. I mean, I've mentioned it a few times this week. Florida had 45 points in 10 possessions. Georgia had 41 in 11 possessions. A&M last week, 34 in 10 possessions. I mean, the teams are scoring a ton of points relative to the number of opportunities they have against Mississippi State.
Toledo put up a lot of points on them too. I mean, they just give up a lot of points. Offensively, they're better. I mean, Jeff Lebby's an offensive guy. You know, he's got that in his background. He's Art Briles, son-in-law, Kendall Briles' brother-in-law. I'm sure they talk offensive strategy during Thanksgiving and, and things like that when they get together. And you can say what you want about Art Briles. Art Briles is a very good offensive coach. And so they have that, there at their disposal.
Art Briles is everything that everybody says about him.
He's all that and more, probably.
I think that's right. I feel like they do need Rodney Hill back. Part of this may be the fact that they have played better defenses in the SEC. Part of it may be the fact that JaQuindon Jackson has been beat up, but it just feels like their run game has not been, over the last few weeks, what people expected it to be.
Well, it's been pretty bad.
It was pretty good when Hill was in there, albeit against, weaker competition.
Well, it was also good when JaQuindon wasn't hurt as badly as he is now. And I don't know if you remember this or not, there were a couple of times in the postgame pressers where we asked Sam Pittman about the offensive line and whether how they were performing. And a couple of times in those post games, he said he gave more of the credit to JaQuindon's ability to create big runs and not so much the offensive line. And it was like, okay, well, it looks like the offensive line is better, but maybe JaQuindon was just so strong and running so hard that it helped overcome some of those deficiencies that we didn't see. So we'll see how that moves forward. I think from my eyes, the offensive line is better. The run game took a hit the more hurt JaQuindon Jackson got.
Mm. Of course, I also feel like maybe there's a more of a emphasis on Taylen Green staying in the pocket, and I think maybe that's affected some of the running numbers too.
Yeah, and right now they're kind of in protection mode with him. They don't want him to take another shot to the knee. I thought last week against LSU he had some opportunities to run and didn't and chose to stay in there. So I'm sure that's part of it. But in order for them to win, this is, you know, Matt, if they're going to make a bowl game, this is a huge game for them. You know, this is a game that, in my opinion, they've got to get this game.
Doesn't it feel weird that that's kind of the bar for Arkansas to make a bowl game? Well, I mean, it you're in a program that had 9 wins 3 years ago.
Right.
And you were ranked in the top 10, I think, as recently as the early 2022 season. And now it's just, can they get to 6 wins? It just feels like it's an awfully low bar.
It is. But to me, it's not so much. I view the bowl games, I mean, unless you're in the 12-team college football playoff, the bowl games don't mean as much to some teams. But you take an Arkansas who can get in, those additional 10 or 12 practices that they get will be huge for the development of a KJ Jackson and some of those younger guys to continue to work, yeah, you know, and get better. And that's the way I look at it. It's not so much, oh, they're getting to go to the Who Cares Bowl or whatever. They're getting those 10 or 12 extra workouts. And I think that's just huge that they didn't get last year.
No, I understand that. And I mean, I agree with that, you know, in terms of it's beneficial for development.
Yes.
But then you also wonder how many of those players are going to be back.
Well, and
because,
if
I mean, it's like every offseason you've just got this – mass exodus, and it's not just an Arkansas problem. It's
everywhere,
you know, pretty much everywhere.
Yeah, unless they're in those, you know, you're in that final 12. Yeah, I mean, you maybe you want to skip the bowl game. I don't know. I'd play, you know, if it were me. But I've never been in that position where I have NFL draft, possibilities.
It's not just the NFL though. I mean, it's just players just wanting to get out so they can get ahead of the market for transfers.
Yeah, isn't that something? That's the world we live in now.
Yeah, it's. I didn't mean to go off on that. A little chase that
rabbit hunt. Yeah.
Speaking of offensive line, Pittman did say yesterday that Patrick Kutis and Keyshawn Blackstock have split practice this week at left guard. So basically, it's been half and half with the first team with both of them. Of course, Blackstock went to left guard prior to last week's game against LSU. He'd been a right tackle up until that point. Kutis hasn't played this year with a back injury. Pittman said, "Quote." Both of them have played well, but it is competition. We're going to have to run one of them out there with the first team. We'll figure that out after today and tomorrow's practice, tomorrow being Thursday. Both of them have had good weeks. Kutis hasn't played.
Nope.
I feel like maybe this is more of an indictment on Blackstock, the fact that they're even having this conversation at left guard, the fact that you have a player who they have openly said they want to redshirt, potentially coming back before that 4-game window, because you don't put Kutis in here, I feel like, only to take him out, say, a game or two down the line where you can preserve that red shirt. This is about trying to get a better five in place along the offensive front than you have right now.
What does it mean when he says, we're going to have to run one of them out there with the first team? It's not
– basically means we're going to have to choose one of them. Well, we got to choose somebody.
I don't know that those are glowing recommendation words. Mm-hmm.
I think some of that's just kind of how he speaks.
Okay. Somebody's got to do it, yeah. You know, kind of a thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of that's just his personality. But
it's like the basketball coach when I played looking down at me and going, who else we got? Let's see. Okay, I guess it's you.
Isn't it always kind of a red – it's always a red flag to me, though, when you've got offensive line changes like this.
Yeah, yeah, you want more stability. I was thinking about this coming in, Matt, you know, the way things have changed. And you know, talking about the Arkansas offensive line, because that just drawn such focus the last couple of years. But they've got reinforcements coming in this recruiting class. They've got some verbal commitments from some big dudes coming in from different places.
Freshmen.
And that's what I was going to say was – it wasn't that long ago that a freshman starting on the offensive line was an almost unheard of thing, unless you were Anthony Munoz or somebody like that.
Sean Andrews.
Yeah, somebody that was just like, you know, there's no way to keep him off the field kind mm-hmm. of a thing. You know, usually guys like in taking Nebraska, which I feel like back in the day in the 90s and whatever under Tom Osborne, they were the kind of the epitome of offensive linemen.
They called it the pipeline.
But you didn't get to hit the field until, you know, your third year there after a red shirt mm-hmm. and then 2 years of toiling under whatever, and then maybe that third or fourth year you'd get on the field.
Back when freshman teams were something, Nebraska would play you on the freshman team, then they would redshirt you your second year, and then to your point, even getting on the field maybe your third year would be tough. I think it was Clay who's told me this story. You know, he would go on those Big 8 Skyriders tours, and he said, you know, Tom Osborne could point out a guy and say, that guy's going to be an All-America offensive lineman in 2 years. they just knew, and yeah. and they could, you know, they could develop those players. And I feel like that that's really where the portal has hurt college football the most, is that you can't sit offensive linemen anymore. And Amarian Harris is a real rarity right now. Somebody who comes in and develops for a couple, 3 years, and then, you know, he finally starts to play. That's what you used to always see at that position. And now if they don't get to play, they're just going to transfer somewhere that's going to let them on the field.
There's no other position on the field where continuity and stability is more important than the offensive
line.
And
development.
And yeah, and those guys playing together. You see a college team, and I know Texas didn't look good against Georgia the other day, but their offensive line, I think their guys pretty much are all 3 year starters, 2 and 3 year starters. It makes a big difference in your ability, you know, particularly to run the football, which I feel like is very important.
If you got a big old, you know, 295-pound nose guard who's 23-year-old man who's going to be in the NFL next year lined up across from you, and you're 19 years old,
good luck.
Your strength is not going to be – very few players are going to be advanced enough at that age physically to be able to handle that. And I feel like I said, I think that's where college football has really suffered is the most with this, you know, the whole transfer thing is on the offensive line because, I mean, like you said, it takes time. It takes time to marinate an offensive lineman.
Well, I'm a big Kansas City Chiefs fan, and, you know, I'm on some message boards with Chiefs fans, and they're all the time wanting to throw all
handle?
This.
What's your handle?
I don't have a
you do.
They're all the time wanting to throw money at, you know, receivers and running backs and kind of not the offensive line, but the Chiefs organization has chosen to pay their offensive line, and that's caused them to lose guys like L'Jarius Sneed and some other, you know, other players like that. But they see the importance of having that continuity and taking care of those guys that take care of the quarterback.
It's like Big Chief.
Big Chief, yeah.
Yeah, but that one probably is hard to come by.
Yeah.
You got to have like a number, Big Chief 937 or something like that. Hey, switching gears, speaking of Kansas City, Bill Self was in Kansas City yesterday at the Big 12 Basketball Media Day. He gave a little bit of insight into what this Arkansas-Kansas exhibition game is going to look like tomorrow night over at Bud Walton Arena. Said that they're probably going to play a quarters format. They're going to have resetting fouls at the beginning of each quarter, so basically nobody's going to be able to foul out of this. And it's because both teams are a little bit banged up. John Calipari told us last week that they're going to have multiple players out for this exhibition. And then Calipari speaking yesterday, he said, let me find it here, Hunter Dickinson, who's their big guy in every sense of the word, 7'2", preseason All-American, just a great player at KU. He is, I would probably, I guess, maybe define this as questionable, basically with a foot injury. Doesn't know if he'll play. They've got a transfer from Mississippi State, Shaquille Moore, who's going to be out. And then Rylan Griffin, the really good three-point shooter who came over from Alabama. He's dealing with a hip flexor, and he's doubtful for the exhibition game. So KU potentially without, two big players at least in Dickinson and Griffin.
Well, it'll be a packed house tomorrow night. Everybody wants to see what Coach Cal is going to put on the floor. Unfortunately, what he's going to put on the floor for this exhibition is not going to be, you know, what you're going to see for this most of the season. So temper the expectations a little bit. This is not a February, March roster yet. For either team, but it should be entertaining. I mean, these are two storied blue blood programs. I'm happy that they're playing each other. I'm hoping that this will lead to them playing each other more. You know, Arkansas go to the Fog and play there next year, mm-hmm. and that kind of thing. So this is good for college basketball and for these blue bloods to play, even if it is a game that doesn't count in the standing.
Calipari also said that there may be some breaks around the quarter timeouts where the coaches have the players go on the floor and do like some situational work. You know, it's like, hey we want to see your zone offense or your zone defense. We want to do this. We want to do that. So it's not going to be your traditional your traditional game.
It won't be like the Purdue game.
It won't be Purdue.
Yeah,
you know?
It will not be that. It's funny you mentioned that, Matt, that Friday night baseball game that I went to down there, the exhibition with Oklahoma State. Arkansas had scored 4 runs in an inning. And still 2 outs, and, mm-hmm. and Holiday goes out and goes, get in here.
They rolled the inning.
Pulled his players off the field like, get in here.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, take it for what it's worth. It'll be good to see. It'll be good to hear the basketball. It'll be good to hear the squeak of the shoes on the floor. Be good to see the slobber hog. But let's not go any farther than that. Just kind of take what you see and move on.
KU's still got really good players. I mean, they've got a couple of top 35 recruits who are freshmen who are on this team. They've got this Zeke Mayo, the Summit League Player of the Year, who transferred in from South Dakota State. Greg Gurley talked about him pretty extensively yesterday on our podcast. They've got K.J. Adams. They've got DeJuan Harris. So Arkansas is still going to see good players, but I'm sure there's probably going to be a little bit of a disappointment, say, for a guy like Big Z.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to say his name.
Yeah, I don't know.
I won't even
say the quarterback from Tennessee's name. I'm not saying his name.
But that, you know, he's not going to get the chance to, you know, post up against a Hunter Dickinson and get that type of opportunity, because that can really help you down the road.
It can, but, you know, we've the season's going to be long. You got to take care of your guys. Guys who are dealing with ankle injuries and things like that, you got to let those heal the best they can. You don't want to exacerbate an injury like that by letting somebody play 10 minutes in a who cares exhibition game.
As we record this, we have not heard from Arkansas's coaching staff yet. We do expect to hear later today from Kenny Payne, the Arkansas associate head coach, about just about this exhibition game. So if you'll go to our website, wholehogsports.com. A little bit later today, you can read what he had to say about Arkansas and Kansas. When we come back, we're going to play you our interview with Peyton Hillis at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
Hey, welcome back. We want to tell you about our friends at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute. They are your source for holistic wellness and your healthy lifestyle changes. Located in Uptown Rogers, the staff at Enhanced Healthcare will target your specific health plan for wellness, from neuropathy treatment, primary care, weight loss, and so much more. You can count on the experts at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Rogers. Peyton Hillis was an Arkansas running back from 2004 to 2007, and he said before that it was the worst time he could have possibly picked to be a running back at Arkansas. Darren McFadden came in his sophomore year. Felix Jones came in his sophomore year, and obviously they got a lot of carries, but it was one of the great backfields of all time in college football, that three-headed monster for the Razorbacks. They went to Atlanta in Hillis's junior year, played in the SEC championship game. Obviously, he had one of the great performances maybe ever by a Razorback in one of his final games, his final regular season game in Arkansas, a 2007 win over number one LSU in Death Valley. Hillis enjoyed a few years in the NFL, was on the Madden cover in 2012 after a great season with the Cleveland Browns. And then more recently, he was in the headlines for an heroic effort saving his family in the Gulf of Mexico. He was our speaker at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club on Thursday, and we're going to bring you that that time that he had at the podium now. Here's Peyton Hillis at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club.
I was listening to, as I was getting ready for this, I was listening to you talk with David Basil at the Little Rock Touchdown Club last year, and I think you said something along the lines, you said you could not have picked a worse time to come to Arkansas as a running back, because you're here for a year, and then you get two of the greats that come and join you the next year.
You know, I was talking to somebody about this the other day, but, you know, it was Darren McFadden and Odell Beckham Jr. were the two guys that I've ever seen, you know, first off the bat, where I said, you know, they're going to be something special. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they ended up being. But I remember my sophomore year when Darren came in, it was like a light switch. I think we were playing Vanderbilt, and he got his first plays in there at running back, and I saw him run over two guys and scoot on for a touchdown, or close to a touchdown, and I was thinking, man, he's going to be really special. And then all of a sudden Felix came on, and I was thinking to myself, man, I was like, if I could be anywhere else, you know I could do a lot of damage somewhere, but I'm with the best right now, so we'll see how this works out.
It was a different time, because nowadays, if you're a running back that they've got the accolades that you had, and two other backs come in like that, you know, a player may just leave and go somewhere else.
Yeah, the NIL thing, that's a screwy thing, to be honest with you. You know, there's no honor behind any of it. There's no loyalty. You know, I kind of wish they would just sign a kid to, say, a four-year contract. You know, just giving money and say, you know, if you're going to accept that, then, you know, you have to take it and be here for all 4 years. I mean, in the NFL, you just can't leave after every year. You know, you have to follow your contract. So, you know, I understand why Coach Saban left and why, you know, there's no honor behind it and there's really no strategy behind it if every kid can leave whenever he wants.
I feel like, too, it hurts the current players because I don't know that any of them really have that school affiliation like you have. I mean, you're going to end up with players who have been at two, three, four schools throughout the course of their career.
Yeah, and you know, when you grow up in Arkansas, that's all you know is Razorback sports, and that's all you want to be a part of. And, you know, even from ground roots level back in the day, I mean, Arkansas had that camaraderie as if you grew up in Arkansas, you want to be a Razorback and you want to stick there with them through thick and through thin. But now they're just making everything about money and whoever can pay the highest bill, then, you know, they're going to get the players. But, you know, I just wish they would, you know, I kind of get the players getting paid and they probably should get paid something, but you should hold them accountable too. Cause what's that teaching them, you know, just to go out into the world and, hey, whoever gives you the biggest buck, the grass is always greener, so take it. That's not right.
We had played that clip from Houston up there, and I was thinking about a conversation I had with him last year. He said that every year he wanted to sign somewhere 8 to 10, maybe 12, maybe 14, depending on the year, players from Arkansas. And he felt like what would happen was that if you had these players from Arkansas, they would go teach a 4-star from Georgia or a 5-star from wherever what it meant to be a Razorback. And he felt like there was a real good camaraderie between kids from the state. I feel like we're missing that right now. You don't see a whole lot of as many Arkansas kids getting that opportunity.
You know, it was I know it was only 20 years ago, but, you know, it just felt different at the time. I mean, it. You know, I don't know if it's because a lot of snowbirds are moving into Arkansas and not making it as personal or, you know, but it just meant something being a Razorback. And honestly, I kind of miss the old Broyles, Houston Nutt days where, you know, they kept that in-state camaraderie and they, you know, made it feel special to be a Razorback. Now it just seems like a number. Or a mascot. It don't even seem like the old Razorbacks of old.
Chip was talking about what a great high school player you were. I remember the first time I heard your name, it was associated with a video of you pulling a truck down the road. You tied a harness to a truck, and that was your workout. How did you come up with that?
Yeah, I did a lot of stupid things. But you know, it did help me out at the time, but then I didn't know when to quit. My body started aging, and then it probably hurt me a lot. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when I was a kid, I ate, slept, and drank football. That's all I did, and that's all I ever wanted to do. And anything I could do to gain an edge, I tried to do it. But, you know, that was one of those things where it seemed like a lot of people found out about it. I didn't want anybody to find out about it, but they found out about it, and they always bring it up all the time. So, I mean, obviously it stuck with people, so that's good.
That was in the day before social media, too. I mean, imagine if you do something like that now.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly. And that social media is some scary stuff, too, though. But I ain't going to get into that.
I want to talk more football with you. I want to double back to that. But obviously, I feel like football is really immaterial to what happened with you last year. For those who don't know, to the extent that you're comfortable, just explain what happened in Florida and maybe how that's changed you over the last couple of years.
Oh, you know, my girlfriend over there knows she's saved my life at least three times. And I try to tell everybody every 6 months I start getting prepared to something tragic going to happen or me almost passing away because it does. I'm a cat. I have 9 lives. I'm no kidding. And, you know, almost passed away from bacterial pneumonia back in 2010 and then almost passed away from COVID 2020 and then again with pulmonary embolisms right after that, then almost drowned. I mean, crap, it's always something. And, but speaking of the Florida story, I remember my mother, she's like every other mother, I guess, just very spontaneous, especially around the holidays and Christmas time. We woke up and had Christmas with the kids, and she was like, hey, why don't we just all just go down as a family and go to Portofino or Pensacola and spend New Year's. And so me and my brother and my sister and our family was like, yeah, let's do it. We'll head down there. And anyway, we drove all through the day, got there late that night, but it was a bad storm. And, you know, being from Arkansas, we didn't pay too much mind to it. And we went to bed. And the next morning, my mom was just speaking out loud right after breakfast and said, hey, let's take the kids down to the beach and let them play. And my poor brother, he had a stroke just before that, and he didn't really have a lot of energy to get around. And so my dad stayed up with him, and so I took me and my girlfriend and my mom and my sister-in-law and my sister, we all went down to the beach with, you know, my mom's 9 grandkids, and we started playing on the beach, and I don't know, we were there for about 30 minutes, and I'm sitting there playing or building sandcastles with my nephews, 3 of them, and my mom let out this scream, and I mean, I think every child knows when their mom screams, there's a certain type of scream that, hey, you pay attention to, and anyway, she pointed out to my son and my niece and said they were drowning, and you could see the tide pulling them back out, and obviously the water started getting above their head. So I hit the water to go get them, and I didn't think. I just left, you know, not knowing at that time, especially what rip currents were and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, I'm swimming out there, and I see my niece. She starts pulling away from my son, and I don't know why. It was in slow-mo, and right after everything happened, I'm down for 11 or 12 days or so in coma or whatever I was in, and I remember I kept having dreams just swimming past my son, and he's looking at me like, Dad, I need help. But I know, like, during that time, and it's not because I'm smart, I just think maybe it was instinct, but I swim past my son, and I'm heading to my niece, and because I knew she was in the most danger. And I don't know, it's like during that moment, a lot of things went through my mind, like, what if my son dies? But then I'm thinking to myself, like, how could I look my brother in his eye if his daughter passes away? And I swim out there to her, and it feels, every second feels like an hour out there when you're doing that. But I get out there to her, and she just wraps her whole body around me, and she just starts screaming and crying, you know, we're going to die, we're going to die, we're going to die. And I go, honey, you're not going to die, you're going to be fine. And in the cycle of time comes up, this gentleman brings this paddle board, whatever it's called, I don't remember what it was called, but my sister swam out there about the same time, and I put my niece and my sister on the paddleboard and push them off. And then I turn around to find my son, and at this time he was about limp, and his head kept on coming, just bobbing out of the water. And I swim up there to him, and I grab him. And about that point, we're about 6.5, 7.5 foot of water, but the tide would come in and out, and so when it would come back out, you could stand on your tiptoes, and then when it would come back in, it would be above your head, so you would have to swim. But he's sitting there in my arms, and his little eyes are rolling in the back of his head, and his head just keeps coming back. And at that point, I just said, Lord, like, whatever you do, take me. Don't take my son. And sorry, hold on. But anyway, it seemed like we were out there for 10, 15 minutes, and it was probably about that much time. And I felt myself fading as far as my strength. And I could feel the tide pushing us back in, and I could feel that we can about get out of it. And my son just got this bolt of energy. He just just kind of awakened. And I remember I could see, like, out of the riptide, and I threw him out of it. And when I did, it just seemed like everything stopped. And I went and picked him up and started walking him. And I don't know how, but he just started getting this energy back. And as he was walking out, I'm still about 12 feet from the beach and about 3 foot of water. But I just remember I just had no more strength left, and I just passed out. And during this whole time, I'm sucking in all this water, and I'm not knowing it out there, just doing it. And I just remember falling over. At this point, I'm still conscious, and my girlfriend comes over to me, and she's motivating me, like, Peyton, get up. You got to get out. You know, you're going to drown. You got to get up. Got to get out. And she's helping me out of the water. And, I mean, can you imagine? There's not a lot a 100-pound girl could do, try to pick me up out of that water. But then I get a few feet from the beach, but the waves are still coming in. I'm face first, and I'm still breathing in all this sand and water. And she ends up turning me over. And that's all I can remember until I woke up 12 days later. And, you know, heard so much stuff, you know. Lucky to be alive. You know, when I woke up, I was crying because, you know, you don't know who died. You don't know what happened. You don't know where anybody was. But it was the biggest blessing in the world that everybody survived. And if anybody had to go, I wish it was me. And after all that, it was, you know, you kind of learned how to walk again. I mean, you had no energy to walk. I couldn't use the bathroom on my own. It was awful. But like I said, you know, if it was had to be anybody, I'm glad it was me.
You know, we use words like heroic to talk about football players, but to me, there's nothing more heroic than being there for your family like that.
I don't like the word hero. You know, I think that any man that has love in his heart, that has love for others, a godly man, you know, I think that he will sacrifice himself, his ideals, for the people he loves. And I don't think it takes a hero to do that. It just needs to take a man that has love in his heart.
I wonder how has it changed your outlook, your perspective? What's changed for you in the last 18, 19, 20 months?
You know, something came across my heart and my mind right after it happened. And I always tell myself this. I try to say if it's permissible, then it's necessary. And if it's necessary, it's permissible. You know, a lot of times in our life, we like to beat ourselves up for the mistakes that we've made. And started coming to the realization that life's going to do that anyway. No matter how you go about it, how smartly, how godly, how evil, how sinfully, life's going to beat you up. And through all that beating, you have to ask yourself, you know, what's the most important? You know, why am I beating myself up? And if it starts coming back at the end of the day that you're pointing the finger to yourself, then obviously you're doing something wrong. You need to be pointing out to the people that you love and you care about that you're going to sacrifice everything for. Because at the end of the day, when you leave this earth, you leave it with nothing but your own legacy and your own memory to your children, what they remember you as and what they can live by.
During that time, I don't remember if it was your father or your brother, but somebody was keeping people updated in the media about your condition. And I just wonder what the outpouring of support was like for you, and maybe did that help in your recovery?
You know, it was funny. You know, when I went under, it was just a regular day. And then when I woke up, it was all this flood of respect and love. And, I mean, millions of people reached out. And it was amazing. You know, some people just thought it was great that you saved your kids. Some people thought it was heroic. Some people, you know, did it because I was a Razorback. There was a lot of reasons why people thought I did it. But, you know, especially in this time that we're having in this country with politically and morally, you know, I think it's probably good for people to see things like that, to give people hope that that you know, humanity is not completely lost.
Hope you're enjoying Peyton Hillis's speech at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. When we come back, more of our Q&A with the former Razorback running back, but first a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They have been serving their community since 1971. They are committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. We go back now to the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club and continue our Q&A with former Razorback running back Peyton Hillis.
So is it the same son who you're coaching his team over at Shiloh Christian now?
That's correct. Yes, sir. He's I don't know what it is. I just, even when I look at the high school kids, they just seem so much bigger and stronger than even when I was growing up. But he's, you know, 11 years old. He's 5'4", 5'5", you know, 160 pounds. And I was thinking, good Lord, son. And all he eats is chicken tenders and pizza. You know, it's amazing. I mean, he drinks ranch like it's a beverage. And I think to myself, like, son, if you would have had my want to at your age, you'd be a stud. But I don't tell him that. I let him do what he wants, and I don't try to push him into it. I want him to love football, and he does. He loves football. And so whatever he wants to do, I hope he does it with 100% of his heart.
Do you like being around the game coaching it?
I do. I think I do at times. I forget that I'm really competitive. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you're yelling and screaming at 10-year-olds and refs that probably shouldn't be out there, I start second-guessing myself about how much I love it.
So I want to ask you about your pro career because Bubba Carpenter is a friend of mine, and you know he talks about he's got his number. You know, he was number 18,000 and whatever to make it to Major League Baseball, and he said, you know, it's special to him because there's only been like 21,000 people who have ever done it. More people have made it to the NFL because the rosters are bigger, but I mean that's still the dream. I wonder, you know, just even getting that opportunity when you look back on it, but what's it mean to you?
You know, That's an interesting question at this point in my life. There's no doubt that it's special. And to reach that level of football, you know, at that time when I was in college, there was no doubt in my mind that I was going, and there was no doubt in my mind that I was being successful. I didn't realize how rare it was. But even to make it to NFL football is special. But I played, you know, 8 years. That's, you know, nobody gets to do that. And when I look back at my career, I think to myself, you know, I had to have a lot of perseverance to play as long as I did, because if I didn't, then I could have gave up at even in college. I mean, there was just so much adversity to where I could have gave up, but I loved the game so much. But, you know, that's anything in life. That's being a parent, that's being a mother, that's being a father, that's working a regular job. That's anybody and everybody. You know, at the end of the day, it just depends on how much work ethic and, you know, like I said before, what in your life are you going to put ahead of yourself to whatever you're working for to get it done to, you know, provide for your family.
So, you know, and I get the sense from you that the football stuff, it's part of your story, but it's not just totally important to you. We showed the Madden cover a little bit earlier. I mean, there's only been a handful of people who've ever had that, and I think you might have been the only one who's ever won a fan vote to get on there. When you see that, what do you think?
For one, will always be grateful for the city of Cleveland. And I don't know if anybody's ever been to Cleveland in here, but Cleveland is a special, special place. And, you know, it's a huge population, but it's like a small town. You know, it's like growing up in Conway with millions of people. I mean, everybody knew who you were. It was good, hard, blue-collar people, down to earth, you know, spoke their mind. But it didn't matter if their brownies were 1-15 or 15-1. You know, they're going to be at the game, and it's going to be packed, and it was great. But, you know, for some reason, my playing style, whether it's in high school or college or in the NFL, the fans really took notice of it, and they loved it, and they respected it. And, you know, it wasn't that I was trying to impress them or anything like that. You know, I just did what I did. I didn't shy away from hits. I love contact, and I wasn't going to run away from anybody. You know, and I still think that in my prime, you can put anybody on the other side of the ball. I don't think anybody's going to tackle me one-on-one. Mm. That's probably still why, though, I have 15 concussions and brain bleeding. But, you know, looking back on it, you know, was it smart? I don't know. But I gave him my 100%, that's for sure.
Who was the best player you ever played against, you think?
I'm sorry?
Best player you ever played against.
Wow, that is really tough. You know, Brian Dawkins, Troy Polamalu, Ray Lewis. Ah, man. Ed Reed. I mean, there were so many great players that I played against. And, you know, I would probably have to say Ray Lewis because he's a special man. We stay in contact. Not as much anymore that his son passed away. It's been really tough. But he, not only was he a tremendous athlete and a guy that really studied his game and knew what was happening on the field, he knew how to bring a man from the utmost bottom he could be, you know, if he missed a tackle, to bring him up to 100% in just one speech. I mean, he just knew how to talk to people and how to give speeches. Overall, I just think as a player, a man on and off the field, a man that's been through adversity, a man that's overcame it, you know, same with like Michael Vick, he probably is.
So you were talking about the Razorbacks earlier when you were over here. I want to circle back around to that. What do you see from the program right now? And from your point of view, what do you think they need to do to take another step forward?
I think they need to get their crap together. And, you know, I've had this talk with a few of the guys up there, but, you know, and I kind of made it in the speech when I first came up, but, you know, they have no in-state blood up there. They don't bring their players back, have them sideline. When you look at Auburn, you look at Alabama, you look at LSU, you know, show your players, show your future recruits, like, hey, look who's came through here. Look who still supports the team. We support our old players, stuff like that. I don't see university doing that. And, you know, I don't like that. I don't see any coaches that have any roots in Arkansas. You know, we had Shebest, we had Coach Nutt, we had Danny Nutt. We had people that not only cared about X's and O's, wins and losses. Every coach is going to care about that, and every coach is going to care about the money. But at a certain time, they were also there because of Arkansas. Mm-hmm. Coach Nutt went there. He loved Arkansas. He wanted Arkansas to succeed. He gave his 100%. And I just, like with NIL, with coaches, it's just money now. And I don't like that.
So it's more of an overview of the program, this year's team. What do you see from them, and what do you think their ceiling can be?
You know, there's no doubt that Coach Petrino is a great coach, and he can do some great things. I wouldn't trust with my daughter or nothing, but, you know, I think he's a great coach. But, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, the more rain they give him, the better off he'll be. And, you know, I'm just hoping that the Hawks can find their stride and we can do something with this NIL stuff. You know, I'm really hoping they can find something with that to where, you know, Arkansas can have, you know, more stability.
So tell people, other than, you know, helping out with Shiloh's youth team, what are you doing these days?
Well, I do some stuff with the NFL. I, you know, have a few commercial properties. Like I said, again, I work with my son. Pretty much after the accident, I just wanted to be a dad most off. Time is precious, and I just didn't realize how precious time was. But, I mean, there's a lot of older folks in the audience today, and they can pretty much tell you, you know, how fast time goes by. But I don't want to miss these moments with my kids, and I want my kids, when they look back, you know, so, you know, Daddy was always there and Daddy was always around, and Daddy always loved me. I think that's probably, when I leave this world, that's what I truly want.
Peyton, you've been great with your time. We appreciate you coming here and telling your story.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Peyton Hillis.
We appreciate Peyton Hillis being at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. Appreciate you being here as well. If you're interested in learning more about the HI Sports Club, you can go to OzarksTix.com, OzarksTix.com. You can see our future speakers. Our next one will be Mike Neighbors, the Arkansas women's basketball coach, next Thursday. That'll be at the Home 2 Suites in Springdale, a noon start time. You can get tickets for that at OzarksTix.com. If you're interested in joining us next week for Mike Neighbors, we'll be back with one more podcast tomorrow to preview both the Arkansas-Mississippi State football game and the Arkansas-Kansas basketball game. We'll give our weekend predictions on tomorrow's podcast. Until then, we hope you see us at WholeHogSports.com, and we'll see you tomorrow. Have a great day, everyone.